And now, Bill Resnick and Hannah Holloman.
Hello, Hannah Holloman. Welcome to KABU.
Hello, I'm glad to join you today.
Professor Hannah Holloman is an activist, too, a member of the faculty at Amherst College, Amherst, Mass. She teaches in sociology and environmental studies, also on the editorial committee of the Journal Monthly Review. Her book, Dust Bowls of Empire, Imperialism, Environmental Politics, and the Injustice of Green Capitalism, that's a provocative title, Hannah. Surprising that Yale published it with that title, but the book is coming out in November. So, Hannah Holloman, you grew up in the Creek Nation tribal capital of Okmulgee, Oklahoma, which shouldn't be confused with Muskogee, Oklahoma. Tell us about your background and how what happened to the land and peoples of Oklahoma informed your coming book.
Yes, I grew up in Okmulgee, Oklahoma, which is in a very beautiful ecological region of Oklahoma. It's the tribal capital, as Bill said, of the Creek Nation. I was really strongly influenced by having grown up there and what's happened to the people and to the land. Living in a tribal capital, you don't have some of the same mythologies of American history that you might grow up with in other parts of the United States. I grew up seeing the Trail of Tears reenacted. I also grew up in an area that's an oil extraction region, and so the decimation of people and the land that's part of American history and capitalist development was very visible all around me. And a lot of people don't know that much about Oklahoma. It's easy from the outside to look at it and say, oh, the people there, they're so backwards, look at the politics and so on. Oklahoma's the state where Scott Pruitt came from, who was recently stepped down as head of the EPA. But you have to understand that that region is an extractive region that kind of deals with a lot of the same issues that other areas that suffer from a resource curse experience. So the politics there are heavily dominated by the oil and gas companies, and you can see the consequences of that all around you. It's one of the poorest, it's one of the least socially mobile states in the United States. It's one of the worst states in the country for education, one of the worst states in the country for people's health. I think the kind of brutality of the politics and economics that undergird the U.S. economy are just very obvious there, and that did have a big impact on the direction that I took in my work and my politics.
You wrote about the Dust Bowl. Did the Dust Bowl hit Okmulgee, that are the tribal areas in Oklahoma?
The Dust Bowl was really more concentrated, or the worst of it was more concentrated in western Oklahoma and west Texas and the eastern portion of New Mexico, Colorado, southern Kansas. And so people were affected by the Depression, obviously, and Dust Bowl, where I grew up. And the stories of the Dust Bowl still circulate among people in that region, but Okmulgee is further east.
And so the land devastation was mostly from the oil industry and not so much from capitalist agriculture. Did they ignore eastern Oklahoma?
Oh, no. I mean, the entire state, just like all of that part of the country, has been affected by capitalist industrial agriculture. And so there's only a very small patch left in the entire state of Oklahoma, and in fact, in the entire United States, of the original tall grass prairie, the original ecosystem that used to dominate vast areas of what's now of North America. And so it was definitely affected by the capitalist agriculture. It just wasn't at the heart of the drought and dust storms that you would have seen images of.
So the land, I gather, in eastern Oklahoma was also all cleared, and then the soil became, I gather, infertile, or the rainfall was not sufficient for capitalist agriculture.
So in the western part of the state, you do have the problem of lack of rainfall, and you have really irrational crop growing in the western part of the state. That part of the entire part of the country, the U.S. Southern Plains, it was warned long ago in the late 1800s, like John Wesley Powell and others who visited the region, that it could not support cash crop agriculture in the same manner that eastern United States did. But in any case, money came pouring in. They wanted to expand the cotton crop, expand the corn and wheat and so on. And so they did plow up all of that region, and it caused, I mean, within just a matter of decades, because the region wasn't really open for white settlement until the late 1800s, and by the early 1900s, there were already reports coming out that soil erosion and soil degradation affected the vast majority of farmland, like way before the dust storms and the drought of the late 1920s, early 1930s kind of really hit the region. So it was a crisis already by the early 1900s, but by the 1930s, when drought hit, that combination of soil degradation and the drying of the soil because of drought led to those dust storms that you are kind of famous in the U.S. history and imagination.
Right. The devastation of the land that you write about and have studied, and that it happened to Oklahoma, that's just not one people's story or one region or even one country. It's happened all over the world. It's happening everywhere, and it's now intensifying. Tell us about that.
Yes, one of the reasons that I wrote the book is that the story of the Dust Bowl in the United States, you know, it's seen as the drought of record. You see it references to the Dust Bowl, especially in the climate change era, all the time in newspapers across the country and even around the world, that treat what happened on the Southern Plains as this isolated event, that farmers from the East who were used to more humid conditions moved west, and because they didn't know what they were doing, their techniques weren't suited to that particular ecology, they created this ecological crisis. But the reality is, yes, in the late 1800s, early 1900s, which is called the era of the new imperialism or the heyday of colonial expansion, as the frontier expanded west in the United States and the U.S., the Philippines, all of these other places, Europe and England were also expanding territory around the globe and expanding cash crop agriculture. And in all of the regions where that happened, there was a major crisis of soil degradation and erosion. And today, a lot of stories of the Dust Bowl, people are looking back to it to say, well, there was this major crisis. The New Deal administration came in. They created new support systems and educational systems for farmers. They changed practices and the problem was solved. We've never had another Dust Bowl. But the fact is that today, soil erosion affects more land globally than it ever did, even back in that time period, to the point that now soil scientists and agricultural scientists say that 80 to 90% of agricultural land worldwide is moderately to severely eroded. And in the past few decades, we've lost about a third of the world's arable land due to these practices.
It seems to me that this is also going to intensify because the hedge funds and the sovereign funds, these vast pools of money, some of them just rich people, they're buying land now, right, all over the world, and in some places displacing very large populations in order to farm the land. And some places they just let it lie fallow because right now it's not commercially viable, but it will be when they destroy the land in other places.
Yeah, it's a very, it's a form of neocolonialism. The combination of land degradation around the world and climate change, which is making wet places wetter, dry places drier. It's shifting the sort of agricultural regions of the world, has led to, the people and the countries and the, as you said, funds who can afford it are buying up land either for eventually to sell or to keep as agricultural land or because of the water resources that are attached to it. So that's another big push for the current land grab is really water resources. Much as it seems like it's about land, a lot of these are really water grabs, because it's not that there isn't necessarily fertile land available, but land that is well watered is becoming much more difficult to find and is expected to be much more scarce as climate change progresses. In a lot of these places where big swaths of land are being bought up, people are being forcibly displaced. I don't know if you've read the United Nations Rapporteur on Human Rights report on environmental protectors and activists who are trying to defend land around the world, but 2017 was the worst year on record for environmental defenders, like communities trying to defend their land against outside intrusion. These conflicts have been very violent, and that seems to be getting worse, and it's expected to get worse if nothing changes in the future. So that's one of the things that really I think is really important for people to understand, especially people interested in environmental issues, that all of these environmental issues have consequences that are very unequal, but also the cause of these environmental issues, whether that climate change and the extraction of hydrocarbon, or whether that you're looking at land degradation and the problems associated with that, before all of that can happen, you have really violent displacement of people. You know, the way that the land is treated is always accompanied by a real inhumane treatment of the people living there. So the sort of brutality of it all really came home to me looking at the history that led up to the Dust Bowl era. But then also today, looking at these issues, we often think about the end of the pipe problems like climate change. And I know people also know about oil extraction regions and what's happening to people there, like in the Niger Delta and so on. But I think we have to treat them always as interrelated and interconnected, and remember that these ecological crises are the result of very violent processes, and we can't just solve them by extracting carbon from the atmosphere or so on. We have to deal with their origins.
This is Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm talking to Hannah Holeman, who teaches in Massachusetts at Amherst University, whose book, The Dust Bowls of Empire, Imperialism, Environmental Politics, and the Injustice of Green Capitalism, it's coming out in November of this year. Hannah Holeman, you point out that these destructive processes are no showing signs of undermining the basic natural processes on which human and other life depend. And you particularly look at agriculture and its contribution to climate change, and then climate change contribution to these desperate efforts at agriculture. Tell us that story.
Okay, one thing to understand about capitalist agriculture, agriculture for profit, cash crop agriculture, is it's very different in its fundamental purpose, and that drives all of the other social and ecological problems associated with it. The purpose of capitalist agriculture is not to feed people, and that is sometimes strange for people to hear, but the purpose is to make money. That fact is very obvious when you learn that we grow enough food in the world now to feed everybody on the planet, but hunger is still a major problem internationally and also in very wealthy countries like the United States. So when the goal is profit, everything about the priorities in terms of the treatment of the land, the treatment of the people who live there and work that land, they shift. It's very different than subsistence agriculture or agriculture to feed or trade in local communities. And so the initial ecological problems associated with capitalist agriculture come in the way that land is cleared and treated to make room for it. That's where you have mass deforestation, the uprooting of prairie grasses and the destruction of the pampas and so forth to make room. So it's very initial processes are destructive just in terms of the way the land is treated to make the space for the monocrop agriculture that tends to be introduced. So once you have introduced cash crop agriculture, capitalist agriculture onto the land, there are a lot of ecological problems that tend to be recurrent in places all around the world where this is happening. Because land is overworked, you have problems with soil degradation, soil erosion. Because chemicals are used, you tend to have pollution of the land and also pollution of water resources. Because different crops aren't really grown in areas that are necessarily most ecological suited for them, they often draw down the local fresh water resources to an extent that different kinds of agriculture, different kinds of crop wouldn't necessarily do. So you have all of those kinds of problems. You replace these really rich ecological diverse regions with a kind of agriculture that can barely support the crops that they attempt to grow on them, which is why they require a lot of artificial fertilizer and so on. And so that's the ecological side of agriculture for profit. But on the social side, you have other problems because your goal is to cut costs and to make as much money as you can. Mechanization is used to displace farmers. You don't need that many farm workers. And the farm workers you do have, they're some of the worst paid, even in wealthy countries like the United States, it's some of the worst paid work, most poorly treated laborers in the country and around the world. You see that as well. You also see that the food isn't grown to be nutritious and to nurture people. A lot of the food that we grow around the world is to make processed food or even feed for animals or for biofuel processing. And so crops that we're growing aren't meant to make people healthy, to nourish people and to feed people basically what they need to live a healthy life. And the farm worker problem, like I said, it's really horrible in the United States. The facts of pesticide poisoning, the fact that the majority of farm workers don't have access to health care, that migrant farm workers can get treated basically however they want with no, however the bosses want to treat them with no legal recourse, the fact that they're threatened with deportation on a regular basis or are deported when farmers in the U.S., for example, don't need the labor anymore. That's some of the social sides of capitalist agriculture, and that kind of at the farm level. But if you think of at the social level, at the level of the broader society, you also have the role of agricultural corporations and food corporations in politics and how that shaped the environment that farmers who are trying to do something different, they don't tend to have the support because any incursions that they make into corporate agriculture's market, corporations just tend to make it very difficult for everybody else who might want to attempt a different kind of farming.
And also that farming makes a huge contribution to global warming and to greenhouse gas concentrations. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so the other thing about mechanized farming, it is heavily fossil fuel intensive, but also the agricultural methods that release carbon from the ground. People may not realize that one of the major carbon storage systems on the planet is the soil. And if you don't have a system of agriculture that keeps carbon in the soil, in all the places where the land has been tilled up, that carbon's been released into the atmosphere, exacerbating climate change. And so there's the two sides of it. There's both the agricultural techniques and the release of carbon and also the fossil fuel intensive mechanization.
And there's also the processing of foods and the transporting of foods. They burn a lot of fossil
fuels. All of that.
All of that create a vast amount of carbon and cannot continue, and which is what we're going to talk about next. I'm Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour, talking to Hannah Holloman, who just wrote the book, Dust Bowls of Empire. It's about the imperialism, the expropriation of land everywhere, the ruination of the land, the constant, often generally successful effort by the rich to take over more land and expel the people and practice the same agricultural methods that ruined the land that they left and that is still ruining the land all over the world. Hannah Holloman, now we're facing this global warming crisis. You've written about both the mainstream proposals, which are inadequate, and then what is to be done. Tell us about your ideas.
Well, I think that the best ideas out there and the best model out there for the kind of agriculture we need to sustain life on the planet and communities and to have a more democratic food system is at the movements for agroecology and food sovereignty, I think, are really the movements to learn from. And Miguel Altieri there in California has written a lot about agroecology, but Via Campesina, the landless peasants movement in Brazil, these are really the models that they're promoting because they integrate concern for the ecological regions and agriculture, but also emphasize questions of power and farmer and community control, protection of the land, not just ecologically, but also from it being from expropriation. And I think in the broad sense, that's the alternative and that's the model that we should really be working towards. I think that in the United States, you know, there's all kinds of movement toward better agriculture, the CSAs and so on, and community supported agriculture and different kinds of initiatives. But I think we're up against a lot with the USDA and farm policy here makes it really different. It incentivizes and subsidizes agriculture for profit. It has a really racist history, so you have land owned mostly by white people. You have a movement now to try to get land back in the hands of indigenous and black farmers. I think that's really important. So I think that we have a really complicated policy environment, and I think at the local level, people do have to think about who owns the land, how is land being preserved, are there resources available for indigenous and farmers of color, you know, who are your farmers, who are you buying from, what kinds of movements are they involved in. And then, like I said, at the broader level, though, I think the movements for agroecology and food sovereignty are the most important and the ones that we do need to learn from.
In terms of the larger climate crisis, it seems to me that the reason that they can make profit devastating the land is that there's this demand from people who live seven cities for the oil, mm-hmm. for the mobility, for the food from all over the world. They want to transport it to them. It seems we also have to think about the cities and changing the cities. And even in the cities, of course, we have urban gardens. We have people who are aware of that, but they're also creating movements, and those movements could be political. How do you see this combination of this struggles on the land by farmers and rural people and ex-urban, suburban, and city people, and then this struggle to change the cities and to change the political culture of the cities?
Well, one of the things that I've thought for a very long time, from the time I lived in Oklahoma until I moved away and was active in the anti-war movement and starting in 2002, 2003, and so on, was I thought there should be a lot more communication between the organizations that are based in the cities and those based in rural areas. Collaboration, organization, learning what the issues are in different places, because the two things are so interconnected. I mean, the problems in rural areas, the displacement of people has been one of the drivers of urbanization. The fact that people can't make a living, the farms have disappeared and so on, causes problems in the city and concentrates, like you said, demand for those resources and so on. But I think that the more that you have collaboration between organizations in the cities and people and organizations in the rural areas, the better off we'll be. And so that's something that I don't see happening very often, but I think that it's very important.
Hannah Holman, it was so good talking to you. Your work is so important. Keep up the good work.
So much for having me.
Thank you.
I just blowed in and I got them Dust Bowl blues. I just blowed in and I got them Dust Bowl blues. I just blowed in and I'll blow back out again. I guess you've heard about every kind of blues. I guess you've heard about every kind.